Investigators are trying to learn more about Edward Archer, the man suspected of firing a barrage of bullets at a Philadelphia police officer last night. I'm Tom McDonald, and this is Newsworks Tonight. Dave Heller is off this evening. Officials are calling it an execution attempt. The officer is in stable condition. WHYY's Bobby Allen has been following the story and has the latest on the suspect, who told police that he has pledged allegiance to the Islamic State.
No one knows how seriously to take Archer. In terms of extremist ties, sources say that very well could be made up. Investigators just aren't sure. Briefing reporters, Mayor Jim Kenney says surveillance footage of the ruthless shooting by a man in a white gossamer robe is chilling.
In no way, shape, or form does anyone in this room believe that Islam or the teaching of Islam has anything to do with what you've seen on that screen. That is abhorrent. It's terrible.
Likewise, Police Commissioner Richard Ross warned against leaping to any conclusions. He says Officer Jesse Hartnett suffered a broken arm and nerve damage in the barrage of fire. Ross calls Hartnett's survival astonishing.
Absolutely amazing that that's all he sustained. I cannot explain how he escaped that. Nothing short of miraculous, and we're thankful for that.
The police commissioner says Hartnett, who was somehow able to return fire, did exactly as he should in that situation.
I don't know that he could have done anything different. In fact, I know he couldn't have. I mean, who would expect that someone would try to gun you down in that fashion, walk up on top of you, stick their arm in the window, and continue to fire multiple shots?
One key question now is, how did the suspect get the gun? Police say the firearm was stolen from a city police officer's house in 2013, but how many hands it passed since then is unknown. Archer, who is slightly wounded, is in police custody and is expected to be charged soon. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
The shooting of Officer Hartnett unfortunately caps Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney's first week in office. Joining me to discuss the mayor's first days are WHYY reporters Katie Culinary and Kevin McCoury. Welcome back, both of you. Kenny's week began with the inauguration on Monday. What kind of tone did he set there?
Right. Well, his week started off on a really celebratory note, and he set, you know, the tone that we've seen throughout the campaign, which was this Jimmy from the block, right? We have this guy from South Philly who was a councilman for 23 years and really focused on constituent services, kind of morphed into this progressive politician, and that's who he's going to be as mayor. We saw that with the block party that ended this day of celebration. We had the Geeter with the heater on stage dancing
Jerry Blavitt
dancing with every Philly mascot. And a lot of people sort of remarking that this was different from sort of the black tie ball that you usually see. But getting down to policy, his speech at the inauguration wasn't really chock full of new policy plans. It was sort of a recap of everything that we heard on the campaign trail about improving the schools, improving city services in every neighborhood in Philadelphia. And he really gave the floor to Council President Darrell Clark, who gave a much more substantive policy speech, announcing a plan to create 10,000 green jobs and calling for criminal justice and tax reforms. And that, I think, is sort of a clue about the kind of relationship, the improved relationship that Jim Kenney is going to have with City Council going forward.
When you look at just the walk from the Academy of Music to City Hall and the promises of Kenney to still use the subway to get around, it's definitely a different, more laid-back person in the second floor of City Hall than we've seen over the last 8 years.
Right, absolutely. And another interesting twist of note is that he also launched his new social media accounts this week. So we have the new @PhillyMayor account that's being run by Jim Kenney's digital director, but he's still vowing to use his personal account, which he's mostly been using so far to retweet the @PhillyMayor account.
Which I was actually chastised about when I first tweeted it. I was told, no, both accounts are still active, and I got in parentheses, for now. So, I mean,
right.
And the one thing, on the first of the year, Jim Kenney put out something over Twitter about how he was laid back and showed his gaffes in his campaign commercials,
right,
which people should look on YouTube to see that. That's got a few little funny outtakes, shall we say.
And if you're a fan of the bleep, you'll hear that a lot as well.
Well, something that they're hopefully not bleeping is Kevin McCoury, who's here to talk about, as the week progressed, we talked about how Kenny and schools were going to go on. What do we look or foresee in the weeks and days to come?
Well, one of the things I thought was interesting is that, kind of to Katie's point, you didn't see Kenny come out in the campaign, really, or even in the first few days here, with any real strong output goal when it comes to education, unlike the previous mayor, Michael Nutter, who came in saying, we're going to raise the graduation rate and we're going to cut in half the dropout rate. You haven't seen Kenny give any real specific pledges of promises on the output sides.
Not anything that you can be held to at 100 days.
Right. Well, he's making promises on the input side. So he's saying, I want to have more universal pre-K. He's saying, I want to have 25 community schools. So he's focusing on how can I put more resources into schools that are going to make a difference. And one of the things that at an event this week that he emphasized then, he continues to emphasize, is that teachers are not the problem in public education. He goes out of his way to say that at every public event at a school. He always emphasizes that schools have deep needs, children come traumatized, and we need to provide a little bit more of the resources to help the situation.
The one thing that we did see was Jerry Jordan, the president of a union that represents teachers and other workers in the schools, was right up in front of the Academy of Music, just a couple rows away from the orchestra pit.
The union was a major supporter of Kenny during the campaign. They continue to be aligned, it seems, in ideology. One of the things I think it's going to be interesting to watch as the days and months unfold is that there could be some ideological differences that crystallize between Kenny and Superintendent William Height. Height, you know, would love more resources. He would love more universal pre-K, more community schools. But he seems to place low-performing schools on a much stricter schedule. He calls for closures, mergers, charter conversions. You don't really hear Jim Kenney talking about any of those things. And he really does seem to have a greater faith that adding resources up front is really going to solve those problems down the line.
That's why pre-K is so important, because often our children get to kindergarten to first grade, they're not prepared. And now the teachers have to continue to try to struggle to drag the child forward when it's almost an impossible thing to do.
Another unvarnished look that we had for the new mayor is right at the end of this week, today, he came face to face with the harsher realities of being mayor. And how do you respond to the shooting of a police officer last night?
Right. Kenny went straight to the hospital to see the officer after the shooting. And at a press conference this afternoon, he made a point of saying that Islam had nothing to do with it. Again, Edward Archer, the suspect in this case, allegedly did the crime in the name of Islam and pledged allegiance to the Islamic State. That's still being investigated, his connection and whether or not he was radicalized. But again, Kenny made a point of saying that his religion had nothing to do with it and that he was just a criminal with a stolen gun.
It's one of the key factors that Kenny campaigned on, that everybody is equal in Philadelphia and nobody's going to be moved to the outside in a Kenny administration.
Right, exactly. And earlier this week, we heard Kenny commend President Obama's executive orders aimed at tightening the country's gun laws. And he made a powerful statement that it's actually greed on the part of gun makers and gun dealers that's at the heart of Philadelphia's violence problem.
Week one down, a lot more to come for Mayor Kenny. Thank you very much, Katie Culinary, Kevin McCory.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
General contractor Griffin Campbell will serve 15 to 30 years in prison for his role in 2013's deadly Center City building collapse. WHYY's Aaron Moselle was at today's emotional sentencing hearing.
A jury found Campbell guilty of involuntary manslaughter and aggravated assault because his demolition project turned deadly when a three-story wall fell, crushing the Salvation Army thrift store at 22nd and Market Streets. Assistant District Attorney Jennifer Selber says Campbell made a series of reckless decisions that ultimately killed six people.
The choice to gut the Hoagie City building from the inside out in order to salvage it was probably his most crucial error. And then once he destabilized the building, he refused to pay for a high lift to take it down safely from top to bottom. And ultimately, he chose to then use mechanical demolition to take down the unstable building.
Campbell's attorney, Bill Hobson, called his client's sentence excessive. He maintains Campbell is a scapegoat, paying the price while those who hired him get off scot-free. He says Campbell did his best to demolish the building safely.
You're talking about a guy who spent 12, 14 years running a food truck with his wife. He only took at most four buildings down before this.
Sean Benscop, an excavator operator working for Campbell, pleaded guilty to the same charges his boss was convicted of. But Benscop will serve half the time, 7.5 to 15 years. His lawyer, Bill Davis, says Benscop thinks the sentence was fair.
He took responsibility for his part. Truthfully, he had done that from the very beginning. When questioned, he answered honestly on the day of the incident, all the way through to the day of trial.
Lawsuits filed by survivors and family of those killed have been consolidated into one case, slated to begin in September. I'm Aaron Moselle, WHYY News.
In today's headlines, the Port Authority that runs the George Washington Bridge wants to keep confidential a law firm's memo sought by a defendant in the Bridgegate scandal. Former Port Authority executive Bill Barawi is seeking to unseal a memo from the law firm advising the authority. The memo relates to subpoenas from a New Jersey legislative committee about the authority's finances. The Pennsylvania School Boards Association is suing Governor Tom Wolf and the state legislature, saying it's illegal and unconstitutional to withhold state and federal school aid during a budget impasse. The lawsuit, filed today, asked Commonwealth Court to prevent the state from withholding the dollars. And former Councilman-at-Large W. Wilson Good Jr. has been named Senior Policy Advisor to Council President Darrell Clark. In a statement, Clark's office called Good a leading advocate for economic justice, community development, and equal opportunity over 16 years of service on City Council. Good lost his bid for re-election last year, but he'll actually be receiving a bump in pay, earning $135,000. He earned about $129,000 while on council. Taking a look at the weather, continued cloudy tonight with a low of 38 degrees. Morning rain, but warmer on Sunday with a high of 61. Still ahead, when you see a worker up in a cherry picker checking power lines, you hope they know what they're doing. If they've been trained at a community college, there's a good chance that they do.
2.5 days they're here on campus taking math, electrical courses, physics course.
In Erie, traditional four-year universities are trying to replicate that idea. That's coming up as NewsWorks Tonight continues.
Bard College at Simon's Rock in Great Barrington supports WHYY and is hosting Discovery Day for students who are ready to start college early. On Saturday, January 30th at 8:30 a.m., motivated students and their parents can learn how early college helps students innovate, accelerate, and excel. Discovery Day offers a chance to learn about academic and residential programs, participate in tours, interviews, sample classes, and more. More at simons-rock.edu.
Unemployment has fallen to just 5%, but getting it much lower, that's going to be the hard part.
I've had seasonal, like, retail jobs and lasted, like, a couple of months, but that's basically it. I've done probably, like, 150 resumes and applications.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Jobs Day, next time on Marketplace from APM.
Tonight at 6:30 on WHYY.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Tom McDonald, in for Dave Heller. In many cities in Pennsylvania, community colleges are expanding to meet growing demand. Residents want more opportunities for job training and education. Businesses want to help their employees move up in the ranks, and cities want to appeal to the business community by offering those programs. It makes sense that Erie, the largest city in the state without a community college, would want to add one, but that's proven difficult. Some creative and controversial alternatives have emerged. Keystone Crossword's Eleanor Kibanoff takes us there.
The back of Barry Grossman's house is mostly windows. That's so you can better enjoy the panoramic view of Lake Erie.
In the last 2 days, I've seen 4 major lake liners go by. Usually you don't see them this time of the year.
Grossman was the Erie County executive until 2014. He thinks that industry is starting to pick up around the lake again. But he worries that Erie's workforce won't be ready for a big turnaround.
You know, there's a company here who does ship repair. When I was kind of executive touring it, they couldn't get enough welders. They were bringing welders in from California.
To improve Erie's workforce, Grossman wanted to bring a community college to the area. In Pennsylvania, there are 14 community college systems with 99 branch campuses and instructional sites. Of the 15 largest cities in the state, Erie is the only one without a community college location. Grossman's community college proposal was voted down in 2010. He says local universities were opposed to the idea.
And when you have 4 colleges in a relatively small county, obviously they can exert a lot of political pressure.
Now, those same universities are stepping in to try to fill that void. Mercyhurst, a private Catholic university, has billboards advertising its 2-year degrees at, quote, community college affordability. And Edinburgh University has created Perico College, what they're calling the community's college. Janet Bowker, director of operations, shows off the 26-acre campus.
The red barn in the distance is actually set up for dairy cattle. This little white building is the summer cottage, and we're talking about renovation even of it to more of a classroom-style setup.
In the 1980s, Edinburgh was gifted a working farm right outside the city. In the past 2 years, that space has found new life. 400 students, mostly low-income, are working towards associate degrees at low cost. The school is creating partnerships with local companies and tech schools. Nathan Ritchie, Vice President of Strategic Initiatives at Edinburgh, gives the example of First Energy Penelec.
2.5 days a week, future employees spend at a Penelec facility being trained to be a utility lineman. And 2.5 days they're here on campus taking math, electrical courses, physics course.
The community's college looks a lot like a community college. 2-year degrees, low tuition, and anyone can sign up for classes. But critics say that the programs are overly academic and don't offer the hands-on workforce training that Erie needs. And a community college isn't just a low-cost foray into higher ed. It's part of the community's development. To compare, look at HAC, the Harrisburg Area Community College. Dr. John Sijelski is president.
You know, workforce is the number one issue for any employer either coming into a urban setting or staying in an urban setting. And so I think community colleges are right at the nexus of helping those businesses identify underemployed or unemployed individuals, giving them the training, and keep those businesses vibrant in those cities.
HAC works with companies, local government, and chambers of commerce in all the areas they serve. Harrisburg, but also York, Lancaster, and Lebanon. The school has grown by 77% since 2002 as part of the region's effort to get back to its feet. Perico College has a similar vision for itself, but it's not yet clear what role it will play in Erie's development. The Communities College graduates its first class this spring. Eleanor Klibanoff, Keystone Crossroads.
Keystone Crossroads is a statewide public media collaboration focusing on Pennsylvania cities, their problems, and potential solutions. WHYY leads the four-station partnership. President Obama will deliver his final State of the Union address Tuesday night. Our regular host Dave Heller checks in on public perceptions of the president with Gallup poll editor-in-chief Frank Newport.
Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Well, before we touch on the president, let's look at top concerns for Americans. I'm going to guess the economy.
Well, it's actually not. We summarized what Americans told us all through the year 2015 when we ask every month what's the most important problem facing the country, and it was dysfunctional government. On average, 16% of Americans mentioned dysfunctional government as the top problem, 13% the economy, 8% unemployment, and then 8% immigration. Those were the top issues. You notice those percentages I gave you are all fairly low, which tells us, and this is important looking at it in context, that there last year was no one dominant problem that Americans focused on more than any other.
That is interesting. I'm looking as an aggregate, those top four you mentioned are under 50%. Hey, I wonder where crime, terrorism, and climate change come in.
Very low. We haven't seen much movement at all in climate change. Terrorism has gone up some in the end of the year. When we looked just at the month of December, when we interviewed people shortly after what had happened in San Bernardino and in Paris, we saw the numbers go up.
That there is little consensus on a top problem, does that impact how satisfied Americans are with the way things are going?
Well, satisfaction is up a little. It's 28% of Americans who all through last year said they were satisfied. As Charles Dickens said so poignantly, it's neither the best of times nor the worst of times. The worst of times since we've been measuring this were back in 1979, 1992, and in 2008. If you look at the graph, that's when satisfaction with the way things were going were in the teens. It was that low or in the very low 20%. It's not the best of times. If you look at the graph there, you find that Americans were most positive and happy back in the late 1990s, dot-com boom, and going back further than that, in the mid-Ronald Reagan years, Americans were very positive. The average across all the years we've been measuring this since the late 70s is 37%, and again, 28% of Americans satisfied now.
let's focus on the job approval rating for the president.
46% was Obama's average for all of 2016. That's about where he was in previous years. I like to put that in some context. Clearly, he was better off than Bush, who in 2007, his penultimate year, was at 33%. So Obama's doing a lot better than Bush was. But Clinton was 59% back in 1999. Things were booming back then, as we talked about with the dot-com boom. Ronald Reagan, 50% in 1987. And then Eisenhower, another president who served all 8 years, his average approval rating back in 1959 was 69%. So in general, Obama's approval rating is slightly below average for all presidents we've ever measured, and a little better than Bush, but not as good as the other presidents who've made it all the way through to their seventh year as president.
Does his approval rating break along partisan lines, though, any more or less than the aforementioned Bush, Clinton, Reagan, and Eisenhower?
It does. Our analysis shows that the gulf between Republicans and Democrats is larger than it has been at almost any other time in the history of our measuring presidential approval. George W. Bush also had a big partisan gap, but Obama's is actually slightly bigger. At this point, 10% of Americans who identify as Republicans say they approve of the job Obama is doing as president. Democrats, 87%, and independents are right in the middle at 42%. So that gap between Republicans and Democrats is 72 percentage points. And as mentioned, that's higher than we would have found for Reagan or for Eisenhower, or even for Jimmy Carter, who had a low approval rating, but who was more bipartisan in his appeal and lack of appeal than Obama is today.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief of the Gallup Poll, speaking with Newsworks Tonight host Dave Heller. Finally, forget smuggling cell phones into prison through plumbing or baked into a cake. One Philadelphia man simply tossed them over the fence. And as you might expect, he got caught. NBC 10 reports 24-year-old Dana Taylor Jr. entered a guilty plea to throwing a bundle of cell phones and chargers over the fence at a federal prison in Connecticut Sunday morning. The package was wrapped in camouflage paper. He faces a fine of up to $200,000 and up to 2 years in prison. It's not Taylor's first attempt to pass contraband into the prison. He was stopped in August with a backpack full of cell phones, marijuana, tobacco, and other items for the inmates. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Binyakov and Kimberly Haas. We had help this week from Brett Rader and our intern, Jared Whalen. The news director is Eugene Son. Our engineers this week were Al Banks, Adam Stanishevich, Bob Alls, and Diana Martinez. John Mussoni is acting vice president of News and Civic Dialogue. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend. I'm Tom McDonald for Newsworks Tonight.
Supporting WHYY, the Cooper Heart Institute provides comprehensive, adult-focused cardiovascular programs that include non-invasive, minimally invasive, surgical diagnostic, and therapeutic options by a team of dedicated cardiologists. The Cooper Heart Institute delivers access to advanced technologies in an academic treatment setting at convenient locations throughout South Jersey. For a consultation, cooperhealth.org/heart or 800-8-COOPER.
Friends School Haverford is proud to support WHYY and announces their winter open house on January 13th from 9 to 11 a.m. Friends School Haverford is a nursery through grade 8 co-ed Quaker school on Philly's main line. Friends School Haverford offers an academically rigorous and progressive program for bright students, where the curriculum is truly rocket science and art, calculus, physics, Shakespeare, and more. Open house or tour details online at friendshaverford.org. Friends School Haverford. Hands on, minds on.